More details on that ever-important meeting coming up in the middle part of January in Junction City. It'll be the annual Kansas Agricultural Technologies Conference, and once more, K-State Research and Extension heavily involved in carrying out this conference. Not only do we have K-State Precision Agriculture economist Terry Griffin back with us once again, we've one of the guest speakers at this year's conference joining us out of Oklahoma State University, where he is an associate professor of agricultural law, Shannon Farrell. We'll talk a bit about what Shannon's topic of choice will be during the conference on the 19th and 20th of January, Terry, but remind us of the broad concept of the conference itself, if you would.
All right, Eric. So this is the 20th annual conference for CARTA, which is, it's a pretty good milestone for any agricultural conference. And we're going to try to do a few things that are special this year. We're bringing back some topics that we're going to revisit as well as some new ones. In particular, this year, the evening session where Shannon Farrell and I will banter back and forth about farm data. And we thought this was going to be really applicable. The term big data is relatively new, but ag data itself goes back to the origins of precision ag. And this is sort of going to highlight the 20th anniversary of the CARTA conference.
Very good. Shannon, good to have you here on the K-State campus for a few moments with us here. Let's talk about your background in this area and then about the importance of this whole topic.
Well, and it's interesting how I got introduced to this, which was partially by Terry's good graces, but we were getting lots of questions from our producers that were being approached by some of the larger equipment manufacturers, ag service providers, about the possibility of participating in some of these data services. And producers had never really thought about their data as a resource in that way. They'd used it to inform their management decisions, but they never thought about the fact that there might be value just inherently in the fact that I've got data about my soils, my yields, things of that sort. And so we started trying to evaluate some sample service agreements, and then that led us to an investigation of, well, do farmers have an ownership of their data? What does it even mean to own data? And so that's why we kind of looked at some of the intellectual property laws, which, you know, we really hadn't seen applied to agriculture in this way before, and to see, okay, well, what really are your ownership rights in agricultural data, and how would you go about defending those if you had them in the first place?
Who owns the data? That's been a moving target the last few years as folks try to sort that out. Do we have anything definitive in pocket regarding that yet, Shannon?
Well, we always have to answer that question with is the favorite lawyer response, and that is it depends, which I think also belongs to economists as well.
It depends.
But, yeah, it really does depend. But it depends on a few things, and specifically, if we're talking about just the data that we have got, you know, pure information, what we really have to figure out is where that fits in the intellectual property framework. And in very short answer, it's not a trademark. It's not really patentable. It's not really copyrightable unless we do something creative with it to edit it or format it or try to gather some analysis from it. So that leaves us with trade secret. So the question is our farm data a trade secret? And one of the things you have to determine with respect to that is, are you treating it like a secret? If you share it with anyone, are you legally requiring them to keep it a secret? And does that information have value to you because it's a secret? In other words, would that information be less valuable if other people knew it? And so that really depends a lot on the circumstances and the kind of information that you're talking about.
But technically, producers can maintain data as a trade secret if they go about it the proper legal way?
Right. If producers do have data that really does qualify under that definition of trade secret, they certainly can. And so then the question becomes, do I sit on that information or can I share it and get the benefits of sharing, which is something that Terry and I are going to talk about because there could be some really serious economic benefits into adding that data to a pool or sharing it in a community setting. But how do I protect that data if I am going to share it and still retain that secrecy interest? And so that's a function of the agreement that you have with the person with whom you're sharing that information, that non-disclosure agreement or that service agreement if it's a service provider. And that's the other thing that we want to talk about with our producers is help them understand what are the criteria I should be evaluating those agreements under. How do I go about figuring out if my interests are protected by this agreement that I'm about to sign? Because once I've signed it and the data has been disclosed, there's really no going back and unringing that bell.
Mm-hmm. And again, you'll expand on all of that in the presentation at the upcoming conference. But that data can, once more, by following certain legal protocols, be protected by the producer without question.
That's correct. Yeah. And that's the balance I think lots of our producers are trying to find is, how much should I disclose, to whom should I disclose, and how much confidence can I have that it'll be used for the things that I'm wanting it to be used for and not used for other purposes as well. You know, we see data breaches in the news all the time, whether they're from the private sector or from government agencies. And I think lots of producers are concerned about their data getting out there. So there's naturally a desire for some caution there, but there's lots of rewards to be had as well.
Well, the technology providers, there's been some discussion about whether they have a stake in the data as well, which is not exactly without its controversy.
Right. And so that goes back to that framework we were talking about between trade secret and perhaps copyright. Mm-hmm. So you can't copyright pure information. That's just a fact. And the courts have said, no, that's not what copyright was meant to protect. Copyright was meant to protect creative works, creative being a defined word under the Copyright Act. So if I just transmit data, that may not be copyrightable. But if I take that data, analyze it, provide some additional content like some graphs, some representations, some tables, things like that, I've added a creative element to it. Now that creation is copyrightable. So an important thing for producers to remember is that if I'm turning data over to someone and they're creating a copyrightable product out of it, do I have a right to access that copyrightable product if my data was used as part of its creation? And so if that's something that's a report that's created for me, the odds are pretty good that that's yes. But if that data has been aggregated significantly and there's lots of producers' data in there, you know, do my rights get a little bit diluted in saying, well, I should have access to that product as well?
So this gets rather intricate, legally speaking.
But, it does, quickly.
But that's why producers need to be aware of that, possibly with the help of their own counsel, but at least know the nuts and bolts of what's required for them to adequately legally protect their data.
Absolutely. And the example that we always talk about in our presentations is whenever you have a piece of computer software and you have a license agreement that says click here if you agree to it. Now, most of the time we don't go through and read the 20 pages of information there. And really, what choice do we have? If I want to use the software, I click yes. And if I don't, well, I don't get to use the software. So that gets us into an interesting legal realm as well in terms of how enforceable are contracts that I really don't have an opportunity to negotiate or really any choice in if I want to have access to that product. Some people would say, okay, well then just don't use that product. But if your product's the only one of its type, that choice is pretty severely limited too. So I hate to give the lawyer answer, but sometimes you actually have to read everything and make sure you're on board with it because there's really not an option to go back and fix that after the fact. Lots of our ag equipment comes to us already transmitting data in some way. It's basically been turned on at the factory and it's telling the manufacturer things about itself. So it's not necessarily an opt-in. It's more of an opt-out. So you might not even be talking about a software agreement. You might be talking about the purchase contract for a piece of equipment to understand, okay, it's going to come with these features. If you want those off, that's something that has to be designated now.
And that's been around long enough that a lot of used equipment, when you buy used equipment, may have these things turned on. So we're not even talking about just the newest stuff. But, you know, even 4-year-old, 5-year-old equipment could still be under that paradigm.
And we've been talking a lot about the data issues from the equipment side. But another thing that Terry and I have spent a lot of time discussing with audiences is data from the land side. You know, we've seen that there's maybe added value in equipment from having the ability to learn these parameters about your ag operation through yield monitors or things of that sort. But we see coming in the not too distant future that having data with respect to a piece of land maybe an impact on that land's value.
That's a marketable property, perhaps.
Exactly. You know, it may be that in the future, savvy producers that are really tuned into managing their farms as precisely as they can will only want to look at pieces of farmland that have a rich data history so that they know soil types, yield histories, and can make those kinds of evaluations. And another piece of that dynamic is between the landlord and the tenant. Is the landlord going to claim complete ownership of the data generated from the farm? Is the tenant going to be willing to provide that? So those are some of the other issues that we have to start looking at in lease context also.
You're hoping at the conference to get into the weeds on all of this and moreover, Shannon, availing yourself to one-on-one with producers at the same time, right?
Absolutely.
And Terry, Shannon's presentation will likely be a keynote segment of the overall conference.
Yeah, so this is going to be the evening session on the 19th. Shannon is going to provide some insights into these things, and we're going to open it up to a lively debate and with some of the most progressive farmers across the Great Plains. And I can assure you that this will be more than just entertaining and informative.
Absolutely. Shannon, thanks for a quick overview of the topic at hand. Good luck with the presentation.
Thank you for having me, Eric. Appreciate it.
You bet. And Terry, thank you as always. We'll give details on the conference here shortly.
Thank you, Eric.
With Terry Griffin, K-State agricultural economist, Shannon Farrell, he's an associate professor of agricultural law out of Oklahoma State University. Once again, he will be featured talking of farm data, who owns the data, and associated subjects at the upcoming and 20th annual Kansas Agricultural Technologies Conference. As Terry said, it'll take place January the 19th and the 20th at Junction City. To register, karta-online.org. That's karta-online.org.